Welcome to the Classy Ring Attire Podcast. I'm Joel.
I'm Chris.
And it's time to get classy.
Let's do it.
And we have to start off this week with some sad news.
Yep.
That I'm sure everybody's heard about by now. Earlier this week, it was announced that Bruno Sammartino had passed away.
82, I believe.
Something like that. So, an incredible age in this industry.
Right. Like, first of all, unfortunately, professional wrestlers, like, it's rare that they live that long.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, you know, Bruno Sammartino was all about healthy living, and, you know, the guy was, you know, even at 80, was, you know, just a brick house.
Yeah.
So, you know, he took care of himself better than most.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously his, you know, age longevity showed that. But even beyond that, like, I mean, it's, yeah, I know we don't really talk a whole lot about him on the podcast just because, you know, he's like generations and generations beyond us.
It's a thing where a lot of people covering this, like, you obviously didn't grow up watching Bruno Sammartino. I didn't grow up watching him.
No.
I've gone back and watched, like, once you got to the part of your, like, wrestling history, you're like, I should, like, have some scholarly thoughts and inputs on this. And you go back and you find some old, you know, Madison Square Garden videos. You find, because there are videos out there of him wrestling.
Yeah. The extent of my Bruno exposure was him being in his son's corner at the first WrestleMania.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's what people have kind of seen.
Yeah.
Especially with the network, and that's the thing that people go back to. It's like, let's watch WrestleManias, and that's the one where he was at.
But, you know, beyond that, it can't be stated enough on just how big of a pillar he is in professional wrestling. Like, he predates so many other top wrestlers. Like, he basically was the mold for it almost, you know.
There is a reason he was called the living legend.
Yeah. You know what? Some people on Reddit, you know, got kind of upset that Vince used that hashtag whenever he was talking about, you know, the passing of Bruno, you know, hashtag the living legend. I'm like, he was such a legend while he was still living. Like, give him the, like, let him keep that.
That was his name.
Yeah.
Like, Andre is the eighth wonder of the world.
But the guy had such a legendary life. So, yeah, the living legend. Like,
but I mean, that's what
That was his name, like, even while he was still wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So,
And it's this guy has pioneered. It's been really kind of nice to read a lot of people talking about, you know, growing up on him.
Mm-hmm.
People who are older than me talking about this is their first foray into wrestling, the influence that he has had on this business. I mean, Bruno Sammartino as a superstar is, you know, arguably the crux that allowed WWE, then WWF, then maybe WWF.
Yeah, because there was a post that Bruno Mars posted because, you know, his dad, you know, was such a big fan. So whenever he came up with his stage name, that's why he picked Bruno for that.
Yeah.
But there was a picture that he took with Bruno Sammartino holding like a WWF belt. So yeah, he was definitely in that era.
But, you know, his status as a folk hero, essentially, is what allowed this smaller territory wrestling company to start making these strides to becoming what the now WWE is today.
Sure. And, I mean, you know, it's astounding when, you know, you held a record at some point associated with a company like WWE, because they love breaking their own records.
Mm-hmm.
So it's astounding when you have a record that's still standing. And that obviously is his, I think, 7.5-year reign.
I don't think his record is being broken.
There is not going to be, you know, no one in this business has that kind of patience anymore.
No.
You know, and obviously, you know, having weekly shows and monthly pay-per-views and everything, like, that kind of exposure kind of, you know, like, ruins all, you know, patience to get to that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, that's a record that I feel pretty confident saying that's not going to get broken anytime soon. Just like, well, we thought, you know, the Ric Flair's, you know, the 16 world championship record wasn't going to get even touched, and John Cena's been tied with that for about a year now.
Yeah, that one will get broken.
Yeah.
But I think Bruno Sammartino has the longest reign for ever.
Yeah, and that's not like combined championship reigns. I think he had another one that was a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think his like combined reign is like 10 years or something like that. That's absurd.
Well, it's the reason why when people like CM Punk
had that, you know, that
have their reigns, we have to kind of like the longest reign of the modern era.
Yeah.
It's all 100% because of this guy.
Yeah, like that's why like reigns like CM Punk and like Asuka and NXT, they're so special these days because it's so rare, you know, and it just doesn't happen anymore. I mean, even that, again, 7 years is nothing to, you know, slouch at.
Yeah.
It's just, it blows my mind sometimes. We'll miss you, Bruno.
Yeah. Moving on, Raw and SmackDown this week. We had
big ol' shakeups.
Superstar shakeups.
One of the biggest shakeups, I'll go ahead and just throw this out here right now, is they split up John Cena and Nikki Bella. As per in the script.
The Fine. Script
of Total Bellas.
We'll talk about your thing first.
No, I just wanted to make that joke. I just wanted to make the, you know, obviously this whole relationship was scripted joke.
Yes, John Cena and Nikki Bella have split up.
Okay, that's all we have to talk about.
We had to, like, it had to come up on the stupid podcast. Do you think they'll get back together in time for the season premiere of whatever?
I don't care. Maybe, probably not. I don't know.
Maybe
give John, like, an extra month or so to write up a new, like, 20-something page contract for her to sign.
I will say, again, going back to that John Cena Chris Hardwick podcast that is somehow coming up a lot.
It's coming up a lot now. I mean, I was telling people to like listen to it when it came out because it was really interesting.
But it came out. I mean, it was coming out to promote Blockers,
right.
So it's not old. But we're not like digging into archives.
I believe they recorded it maybe like a couple weeks before it actually came out.
That's my big curiosity because he talks a lot about Nikki.
Yeah.
And he talks a lot about being in love with Nikki and love his life and changing his life to be with her and to build a better life with her. And this is all unprompted from Chris Hardwick. You know,
no one poked him for it.
These you got any special ladies let's talk about.
Right.
No, he sounds genuinely, you know, thrilled to be in this relationship with this person. And that was the big thing, is like, I just listened to this podcast. And I know I listened to it about a week late, but, you know, to go from that to this, I was like, it is genuinely unexpected. As you say, I don't know.
I don't either.
Such is wrestling relationships.
Sure. I was trying to go through Chris Hardwick's Instagram because like usually he'll take a photo when he records with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to see exactly when that was, but I didn't, whatever. I didn't want to dive that deep into it because I honestly don't care that much. This is weird, the timing of it, because, you know, it was like a year and like a week that they got engaged, or a year and 2 weeks, because I think WrestleMania was earlier last year. I don't know. Just whatever.
I don't know.
The shakeup, the real shakeup,
yes,
for realsies. Had a lot of interesting moves. I felt like, just in general, that SmackDown really got the better hand out of this.
If we're considering just sticking fully in kayfabe, Paige is a fabulous GM. Paige, negotiated Kurt Angle under the table for this.
Like, first of all, you got Daniel Bryan as a competitor again, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got her as a GM, which, you know, whatever. I was kind of meh. But, you know, it's good that they gave her something to do.
I mean, I think the biggest thing is she doesn't have a character as a GM yet.
No.
You don't know what kind of GM she is. She should be. I don't think she knows.
And which is interesting because part of the shakeup was Absolution did come over to SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even you can be like, oh, you know, she really, you know, pulled strings for that to happen or something like that.
I will say, disappointed that it's still not a draft. That we're still not seeing
some sort of structure.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one thing that really, and also it's weird because it is a week after the WrestleMania Raw and SmackDown when you have these debuts.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the NXT call-ups that happen this week just doesn't feel the same. I don't know.
Well, I think it continues the point of like we're now up to 10, maybe 12 debuts.
Yeah.
And I was like, you can do those one a month. Mm-hmm. You have that's a year of debut.
On top of returns and everything, yeah. It's kind of nuts. Was there any particular shakeup, acquiree or whatever you want to talk about?
So I guess some of the biggest stuff is, you know, we talked about SmackDown kind of getting the lion's share of this.
I mean, the fact that they got Joe and Asuka,
yeah,
you know, alone.
I don't know. I've seen some people officially credit Asuka as part of the shakeup and some not. Because she was essentially on SmackDown for her program with Charlotte ahead of time, even though she was on Raw prior to that.
It just made it official.
Yeah, I guess so.
She still had matches on Raw in the lead up to WrestleMania, so she was just basically doing both for like the last month before WrestleMania.
Yeah. I feel like Raw's biggest get was Drew McIntyre, which is from NXT, not from SmackDown.
Which is weird because I mean, he's in a tag team with Dolph.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if I would have done that with, you've got Drew McIntyre, who is a transformed man the last time he was on the main roster.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I would have rather just seen what they would do with him on the main roster by himself. And maybe they still will, and this is just a big surprise, and there just happened to be, you know, him and Dolph are friends or something. I don't know. But clearly, like, that was the biggest get for Raw, I think.
Yeah. Followed up by Bobby Roode at number two.
Yeah. I feel like I'm blanking on somebody else that, like, maybe came up from NXT or something. I don't know.
I mean, they just, Raw didn't.
SmackDown had the ones that, like, really, like.
Yeah. Well, part of it is, so we talked a little bit beforehand. Mm-hmm. SmackDown has, like, cup runneth over on their tag team division now.
Now they do, yeah.
Like, what are you going to do with all of that?
I mean, you still got Usos and New Day.
You have Usos and New Day.
They did not move at all. I thought one of them was going to move.
Right, and these guys were carrying the division for a better part of a year and doing it beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big thing is, like, I could watch these two tag teams in another 6 months of matches without ever getting bored.
The thing is, The thing that's funny about this is SmackDown's tag team division feels so stacked, and yet they still lost some tag teams. You know, they split up Gable and Shelton Benjamin, which I was happy about, but I'm really scared that Gable's going to get lost in the shuffle over on Raw.
Mm-hmm.
I would have preferred if the roles were reversed, because Shelton's special, and Shelton has an established personality that he's going to be just fine if they put him on Raw and then have Gable on SmackDown.
But Gable has not had to swim these waters alone yet.
Right. And I believe Fashion Files, or Fashion Police, whatever, they moved over on Raw.
Yeah.
I might be forgetting somebody.
Well, the big thing is technically Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn as a tag team, whatever, are now on
Raw.
On Raw,
yeah.
Although that wasn't. That was at the same time, but structurally adjacent to the shakeup.
Whereas you got,
But you have these two, mainstays that have been doing great.
Mm-hmm.
You're building up the Bludgeon Brothers, apparently invested in them enough to give them
a championship,
titles. And I'm starting to really warm up to them.
Yeah.
I'm really kind of interested where this goes. And then it's just tag team.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know what they're going to do
and
with
then
all this.
Just like, hey, here, Sandy's coming.
Yeah.
So you have that on top of everything else, which is weird because all the promo material has just the three guys from Sanity. They do not have Nikki Cross.
Yeah.
And I'm like, she's like half the reason I find them kind of interesting. And without her, I don't know. Like, Killian Dane, he's really good in like weapons matches. But I'm sorry, the other two guys, I don't really care about, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm kind of okay at this point to have Killian Dane kind of be on his own. And maybe, you know, maybe it's better for Nikki Cross. Like, I don't know if they're repackaging Nikki Cross and where she's going to be. Because she hasn't been on NXT in a while.
This feels like an opportunity for, not rebranding's the wrong word, but like a rejuvenation into Sanity.
Yeah.
it feels like, and I think I was always a little more fond of Sanity than you were in NXT.
By far, yeah.
And part of that was just,
I don't think I really came around to Sanity until War Games, and that was mostly because of Killian.
Yeah. And most of my fondness comes from the fact that I want some of these bigger groups. Mm-hmm. You know, I want the NWO without the, you know, mutant creature that the NWO became.
Sure, yeah.
But I love, but also want the mutant creature that NWO became.
Right.
Like, I want this thing that's like, I would love a 16-man faction.
Well, in NXT, you've already got Kyle O'Reilly doing the, you know, air guitar, using the championship as a guitar, so you got that element of NWO. So maybe it's just, you aimed at the wrong faction. You should have been aiming at Undisputed Era.
I mean,
which is still that's too long of a name.
Undisputed Era? Is that six syllables?
Yeah, that's too much. They need to shorten that up.
But like the last, hey, let's have a faction take up half the roster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have the NWO gargantuan monstrosity.
Yeah.
And then the only other thing I can think of is like Aces of Eights on TNA. And both of those are examples where that went terribly wrong.
Yeah.
And so the realist should sit here and say, well, this is just bad storytelling and you can't dedicate half your roster to a single.
And that's the thing. Like, I'm all for every sense of inclusion, except for when it comes to wrestling factions. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to have a cutoff. You know, you can't just add everybody to your faction.
See, I'm the other way. I'm like, I want to try it again. I want to see what you do with 16 to 24 people in the same faction again.
In wrestling history, they're like, what, 0-2?
Yeah, and I mean, it's not a good track record.
No.
It's not, but I want to see him try it again. And it comes from what I don't like is the overly segmented aspects of the show.
Yeah.
I don't like this, you know, this match for this feud.
Yeah.
And then this
no connectivity at all. Yeah.
No. I don't like that you could shuffle these segments around mm-hmm. into any other order and you still don't have a through line for your episode.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've talked about this plenty, but it goes back to that one WrestleMania where every video package is like, this is how the McMahon family is dealing with this. Yeah. And so I want something like that where you're like, oh, we have, you know, these two tag teams. We have these four guys, this supreme leader character. We have these, you know, three women.
Yeah.
And they are infiltrating these. And something where you can have this quote-unquote faction, you know, has this outpost on SmackDown and they're fighting for the faction. Mm. They have this one cruiserweight guy who keeps showing up and, you know, doing this like for the New World Order, New World Order, whatever you call it. And you're doing it on 205 Live.
Mm. You have a representative in basically every division on every show.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have that. When is the last time somebody tried to take over the WWE through fighting? And it was Nexus, I think.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I guess you technically had a SmackDown invasion last fall, but
yeah, but that was like one episode.
Yeah, basically. That was the closest we've probably gotten in the near future. That's why like everyone's still like kind of, you know, licking their chops at a, you know, an NXT takeover. Pardon the pun.
I guess that's what I actually want, is I want the NXT invasion angle.
They've got basically the groundwork for it if they ever want to pull that trigger.
Well, and it's crazy.
But the thing is, like, the main roster is like 75% former NXT
guys, yeah.
So I guess by that aspect, you could have some crossover. You could have some, you know, some Benedict Arnolds, or so to speak, and have people like, yeah, I'm with WWE now, but you know, I'm still NXT at heart. And then, because that, again, a lot of people were saying like that was the problem with the invasion angle with WCW, is, you know, none of the main guys were there yet. So you had a lot of like mid to lower card WCW guys that are trying to stand toe to toe with like top tier WWE guys. And yeah, they're just going to just run them all over.
Well, yeah. And then a bunch of WWE guys switched over to fight for WCW.
Right. And it never really got any. it never got really any momentum.
Right.
You know? But I feel like if they do it, I don't know, not necessarily like have people eventually turn. You can still have that, but you need to have a couple like top tier WWE guys that act as, you know,
well, part of
guys that were in on it all along and they just turned on everybody.
Part of what's crazy is I've been chomping at the bit for this NXT invasion storyline since for 3 years now, 4 years now.
Yeah, however long. Well,
I've been sitting there being like, Sami Zayn's going to lead this.
Yeah, right.
So, like, it's been a while that I've been like, this is the storyline they need to go with. And every time they do this, like, you know, massive upshift of talent onto the main roster, and I'm like, oh, no, those are all my guys for this invasion angle. They so quickly are like, here's this new set. And, like, month and a half in, I'm like, oh, we should be doing the invasion angle right now. This is the perfect NXT roster to do this.
See, this is why it would have been perfect since, you know, KO, Sami Zayn had that match at the end of Raw 2 weeks ago now to, you know, try to get a job for one of them. And they got a double count out. And neither of them was supposed to get a contract until Raw next time. That's why it would have been perfect for them to go back down to NXT for like a good while. Like, 9 months, 9 months to a year, and then out of nowhere, completely like unprovoked, here's Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens leading the charge of an NXT invasion onto the main roster. You know, I think that because then you've got two top gear tier guys that
the main crowd already knows.
The main crowd already knows they have a lot of validity, and you know you can that and plus sheer numbers, you can believe that they're actually overpowering.
Yeah.
Main roster people. I don't know.
Well, and I remember...
But that would also require, like, no call-ups for, like, that entire time.
Yeah.
You know, and just build up those people in NXT.
That would be fine, because you called them all up these past 2 weeks.
You got a lot to build up now.
So, yeah, speaking of Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, that storyline has been Stephanie wrote a letter.
Stephanie, you know... went over Kurt's head and signed the two of them behind his back. If we're to believe storyline.
I'm torn.
Okay.
Because on one hand, I am ready for Stephanie to not clash with her GM. She did it with Mick Foley. She's doing it with Kurt Angle. She's done that since the draft has come back.
It gets to the point where, you know, you have to ask yourself, why would you take that job?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I am ready for, like, I don't think Stephanie needs to go anywhere. I like the Stephanie on one and Shannon the other. But, like, and this is the most dangerous bear to poke. Because I was like, I'm ready for a heel authority figure in charge of the show again. And like, I get that poke, poke, poke. Here's the authority back from the grave forever.
I'm guessing you're saying more along the lines of a heel GM to go along with Stephanie.
With Stephanie, yeah.
Much like SmackDown's always had a heel or a face GM and a face commissioner with Shane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on one hand, I'm ready for that. On the other hand, I still really like Kurt Angle and I'm not done with or tired of him yet.
Yeah. And it's weird because usually around this time, like Kurt's been going for a year now as the GM of Raw. And usually by now, we're like, all right, we're ready for somebody new or not a GM. You know, we can go without having a, you know, power figure for a while.
Yeah.
But no, like I'm pretty okay with it, you know. It's pretty inoffensive and it's we got a healthy dose of the authority for WrestleMania season, but now it's that period of time where they're not going to be on camera for a while, probably not until I guess SummerSlam unless something comes up. But you have moments like these where they'll still interfere or whatever. Which is fine. I didn't really... Yeah, the clash can get a little monotonous and tedious. Yeah. But I'm okay with doing it this way rather than just have Stephanie open up every Raw to, you know...
Yeah, and that's the thing is like...
Start Raw with a talking segment yet again.
I don't... Stephanie, as she... tries to kind of solidify this she's the new Vince character. Man, Vince liked himself so much.
Yeah.
And Stephanie, the character, disregarding all the issues with the, like, oh, I'm also the Be a Star chairman.
Yeah.
But Stephanie, the character, is still revolved around wanting the WWE universe to like her and wanting to...
But also wanting to remind everyone that she's in control.
Right, she's in charge, but she wants cheers, and she gets mad at getting booed.
Right.
And Vince, the Mr. McMahon character, Mr. McMahon thought it was funny.
Right.
Because people had paid him so much money to boo him. And that Mr. McMahon character, like, not just Vince loved it, the Mr. McMahon character loved it, and he, you know, just fed off of this hatred and smiled through it, and he was so in love with himself.
Yeah.
That he loved himself enough for the both of you. You didn't have to like him because he liked himself that much.
Yeah, it reminds me of, you know, the first episode of Something Else to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. Was on the network this past week, and I caught like the first 15-20 minutes of it, and it is exactly what it is. It's a podcast with grainy Skype video and everything. Like, it's,
well, all right,
that's on the network now, and it's all like, right, 2 hours long with like
a 2 hours, so it's a podcast.
It's a podcast with, you know, just two guys side by side who apparently couldn't be in the same state, let alone the same room, with grainy Skype cam and questionable audio quality. So that's not going to last long on the network. I can promise you that.
Is he with the guy that he does
the regular podcast with?
Yeah.
With Something to Wrestle With? Yeah. Uh-huh. It's the same guy. And they work fine together. It's just, come on, you know, come on. It's the WWE network. Like, you got to have a little bit better quality. Anyway, you know, they're the topic of the first episode was, WrestleMania in 1998. I forget the number. I think 13.
Okay.
13 or 14. I don't remember. And they're talking about, you know, bringing in Tyson. And the purpose of it was Mike Tyson was such a big, you know, figure and big and controversial figure and was getting a lot of attention. And they're using that as a platform to get eyes on Stone Cold Steve Austin. And he was already the hottest thing within WWE. But if they put him on the screen with Mike Tyson, he becomes a cultural phenomenon, which is exactly what ended up happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what they... That was the design. That's what they wanted to happen, you know, because they knew Shawn was leaving. So this was their big platform to launch this new star. And so they get a polarizing figure to do that. And I was thinking to myself, like, well, I know that's why they get, you know, big name outsiders for these big events. And now I started thinking, you know, about Ronda and, you know, what was the whole purpose of that? You know, of her big debut match on WrestleMania and getting all those extra eyes on the show, it was for Stephanie. And that just feels a little gross. You know what I mean? Like, she's been in the company for a while, you know, she's got plenty of attention, plenty of people know who she is, but it's like Vince, or maybe it could have been Stephanie's called, like, they want herself to be a globally known figure. And I'm like, that just feels gross.
See,
when you think of it that way.
I get that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you're wrong. Mm. But Stephanie wants to be Mr. McMahon.
Sure, yeah.
There was a
dirt sheet report that was basically essentially the same thing, that they want to use this to establish Stephanie as the Mr. McMahon character of this era.
Yeah. And I think that what they love about Ronda, in addition to the new eyeballs that are going to be in the product, et cetera, is that they see her as the forever problem with Stephanie being the Mr. McMahon character was John Cena can't punch her.
Sure.
You can't have a Stone Cold there.
Right.
And so Ronda
fit that bill.
And she gets to be the Stone Cold to Stephanie's Mr. McMahon.
And again, like, all that, you know, notwithstanding, you know, the I don't want to say questionable motives or whatever, but, you know, however gross you might feel about their intent of it, they still pulled off a match that was way better than they had any right big. You know, like, that's the weird thing about it.
You gotta think about, like, there's all these, like, booking complaints from, like, Head and Hands, I don't want to do this.
Right.
And then it happens, and I'm like, well, fine.
Sure.
If you're going to do it that way. Like, last year was the Shane McMahon, AJ thing. Where I was like, you're like, waste AJ.
Yeah,
why are you wasting AJ on a Shane McMahon match? And then it was the match that it was, and you're like, Yeah, if I was Shane, I would be like, I want to wrestle AJ.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I can't fault anybody.
I still consider that one to be the match of the night.
I think so.
Something was off. Something was just off with Jericho and KO. And that was
Vince didn't like it.
Vince didn't like it. We know that much. But something just wasn't there that we were expecting.
Yeah.
I don't know. And actually, I was, not to get too far off the whole shakeup, because I don't know if you have anything more you want to add with the shakeup or anything.
Well, Jeff Hardy moved over. Which was to be expected on Tuesday. Like, it was a surprise on Monday, the way that it happened. Mm. But once it happened on Monday, I was like, I'm not going to be surprised on Tuesday.
Andrade and Zelina both came up to SmackDown, which I felt was another huge thing for SmackDown.
It is. I hope that he is able to continue to run this established.
As long as he's got Zelina with him, sky's the limit, I think.
Yeah.
But what I was trying to get to is, we mentioned WrestleMania last year, and a lot of times when we talk about WrestleMania, we always, even with stuff like movies, like Star Wars and everything, you're like, I don't know exactly how I feel about it right then in the moment. Like, you give me a while. So, it's been over a year now. What are your official thoughts on WrestleMania 33?
In
Orlando.
Is that right?
I felt the same way,
I've said this, so when we do the reviews of it, I've said this.
I had an argument
point.
With a friend who hasn't watched that many WrestleManias. There was only three WrestleManias that this person had seen, and it was 30. That was my call. Mm-hmm. 33, and the most recent one was 34. And she sat there and was trying to tell me that Orlando was better than 30. I'm like, honey, no. And it turns out she was getting them mixed up. But so that was a whole other thing. But it got me thinking, like, 33, it wasn't, I don't remember it being bad. And maybe, I've rewatched it recently, and it was, oddly enough, for the most part, better than I remembered it. I think just that Roman Undertaker match just left a bad taste in my mouth. Even though I liked the send-off that Taker got after the match, but the match itself was ugh.
Well, and that, I mean, I've said it several times, kind of in our reviews of the WrestleManias. Somewhere in the early 20s, they figured out the science behind spectacle.
Right.
And so the spectacle and the pageantry and the
fifth
big
hour.
Dealness of it.
Yeah.
I don't feel like they've had terrible WrestleManias. They've not had unwatchable WrestleManias.
No.
They have had unrewatchable WrestleManias.
Speaking of Dallas, I'm assuming.
That was 27 was my...
Well, okay, because I was telling my friend, like, there are three bad WrestleManias that I consider, and they are 9, 27, 32, pretty much in that order.
Yeah.
32, I will rewatch if I'm talked into it and really bored or something. 27, no, not really going to happen. And WrestleMania 9, I would rather have a limb chopped off than rewatch garbage again.
In its entirety.
9 is still by far the worst.
It's the worst WrestleMania.
Worst.
And it's so comfortably in the worst WrestleMania slot. Like
that not even a half-hour Rock pep rally could overshadow it.
It's kind of nice because there are some things that are so much the thing for such a long time that like when something, a legit contender comes along to challenge it, you're like, nope, I'm already stuck.
That's a your arms are too short to box with God situation. Like, no, nothing has been as bad.
But it's nice to know that it's so comfortably
just something
the worst
just went
WrestleMania.
So far off the rails with 9 that nothing has ever quite come close to it. Which, I think you had touched on it, that's kind of a shame because they never really had a themed WrestleMania since then.
Mm-hmm.
And with better organization and with the resources they have now, that I feel like they have an ability to pull that off if they ever were going to.
Well, they're touching on themes now, but I don't like the themes. I don't like this, like, WrestleMania is the biggest thrill ride,
which
is what it was at 33, and this year was the party. It's the nonstop party, WrestleMania.
It's New Orleans. It's based on wherever they are.
Yeah, it is, and I get that.
Which, also was 9 because they were at Caesar's Palace.
Yeah, and I get that. But I want to be like, all right, if we're doing themes, this is the Super Bowl. This is a clash of gladiators. They're fighting. They're not partying, and they're not going on thrill rides.
Yeah.
Like, we're all going to sit down and agree that these people are fighting for prestige
well,
and
now they're
champions.
They're calling WrestleMania the entertainment spectacular of the year or whatever. So you're not going to get
no, and that's the wrestler versus sports entertainment issue. Do you see what friggin' Ciampa posted?
He's now want to be known as Tommy Entertainment.
That was so good. I hate his stupid face.
I hate everything about him. I hate what he stands for. I hate everything. I really fought myself from clicking the like button.
How did you find a new thing that I would hate?
Right. Tommy Entertainment.
But I do think, like, even when you put 27 and 32 as two of the, you know, your bottom three.
Yeah. I feel like it's a solid bottom three.
I'm wildly
unexposed to the teens as I am with the aughts and the 20s and mm-hmm. now the 30s, you know. But yeah, I don't really remember any of the teens being that bad. I know 11, that was kind of rough.
Yeah, 11 was rough. And I will say that there's the, like, trying to, like, pile stuff for Matt to watch.
Sure.
And, like, oh, you need to watch this match. Every decade-ish has one that I'm like, just watch the whole thing. Like, and it's 7, 17, and 30.
Okay.
Where it's like, just watch the whole show.
Which one was 7?
Maybe it's 8.
Eight's the one in Indianapolis.
Yeah, it's 8. 8's what I'm talking about.
8's the one in Indianapolis. Like, that was my favorite of the aughts.
Yeah.
3's up there just because it's 3 and it's massive.
It's 3 and it's massive, but 3...
It's got the best match probably ever.
3 is 2 legendary, thrilling, genre-defining matches.
Right.
And then some other stuff.
Sure.
Which I will say...
8 was a solid car from beginning to finish.
Yeah. And I will say that's weird to kind of, like... To actually go back and watch 3, it's weird because you're like, but it's 3.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, it's 2 of the most important iconic matches in the history of the business, and then some other stuff.
Yeah. Isn't like the opening matches, I'm blanking on the name, but a really giant dude squashing a bunch of little people?
Yeah. Like,
yeah, that's in 3, you guys.
But I will say, like, if you do the same thing with, like, there's one truly... heinous one every decade.
Yeah.
It's 9 and it's 27, and I don't necessarily have one.
Maybe
for what is essentially the Attitude Era.
Maybe it's 11. Whichever one where the main event was, and it hurts me to say this, but the main event I think was Shawn and Diesel, where the big celebrity guest was Jonathan Taylor Thomas from Home Improvement. I believe that's the one I'm thinking. I don't know if it's that or 12.
Is that the one with, like, the Clinton impersonator?
Might have been. It might have been. Where, like, the plot for the entire night, they were trying to find out where, I think it was
Pamela Anderson was the through line.
Whose corner was she going to be in or whatever?
Yeah.
That wasn't great. I'm blanking on the number, whether it was 11 or 12.
My point is.
Yeah. Late teens were amazing.
My point is, when you have some were late tweens, early 20s, the mm-hmm. spectacle concept was figured out. And so WrestleMania is fun to watch.
Yeah.
And so even when you have your bottom three have two that are 27 and 32, I still enjoyed watching those in the moment. There was still this feeling of, it's WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. And it was going back, and I was like, there's nothing.
Yeah.
And even those, there's nothing, 27 still has Randy Orton versus CM Punk, and still has just the
a good stage.
it has The Rock is back.
Yeah, it had that excitement leading up to it.
And it does have this, like, some of that is diminished with the letdown of knowing, like, oh, the concept of a host is... severely messed up here,
right?
And this is how you're gonna end this?
Yeah, and a lot, there was so much about 27 that we later learned was just a setup for 28.
Mm-hmm.
You know, namely, Undertaker and Triple H when which their 27 match was okay, had like a couple good moments, but by and large it was it was pretty slow. And then
I would say it's the bottom dip in the four.
Yeah. And then you had The Rock set up for 28 with against Cena, you know. And again, it cannot be stated enough. Michael Cole and Jerry the King Lawler had what, a 45-minute segment? I can't even call it a match.
And again, that was an entertaining match, and then it had a segment after the match that was longer than the match itself that retroactively ruined the match.
And I don't remember what the numbers were, but there was somebody that went back and like they added everything up, and in that entire 4-hour show, there was more other stuff than there was wrestling. Yeah. You know? And that is a problem. Thankfully, I don't think we've gotten anything like that since, which, thank goodness.
But that's part of the thing is when you are watching WrestleMania for the first time, when you're like, how'd you like it? And I'm like, it's WrestleMania.
It's WrestleMania, yeah. It's a lot of fun.
But yeah, this one, no. And I got...
Also, 27 was the last WrestleMania that I watched by myself. So maybe that has something to do with it.
That's fair.
Because I wasn't able to watch it with you guys.
That's fair. And I will say there is some... I think I will have some nostalgic feelings towards this WrestleMania going forward.
Yeah. By and large, I like, you know, again, this is preliminary. We might feel differently in a year from now, but I like 34 a lot more than 33.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, like, I feel like you feel the same way, where 30 is the best WrestleMania.
30 is the best WrestleMania
ever.
Very, 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 very closely followed by 17.
Agreed. Yeah. The difference is a hair. Mm-hmm. 34, it had potential, and there were some parts where it kind of came off the rails a little bit. And so it's in my top half. I just don't know exactly where it ranks, but I do know that I liked it better than Orlando.
Yeah.
I feel pretty comfortable saying that.
Is there anything else with the draft that we need to cover?
The shakeup is what I think you mean.
I'd say draft in my heart.
I know. No, I mean, I'm interested in seeing where they go from here. I feel like they can't really do a whole lot with it right now because they're in the middle of a UK tour. I believe they're going to be in the UK next week on Raw and SmackDown.
Possibly, yeah.
So I'm not exactly sure.
Because the Saudi Arabia is at the end of the UK tour, right?
Yeah, I know they're traveling overseas now. Now, so I don't think they're going to come back for Raw and SmackDown. So those episodes are always kind of, but it's also go home before the Saudi show. So you can't really do anything with your new toys just yet because you've already got the build up for that, and then after that you've got to build up towards Backlash, which already has people from both shows facing off against each other at least with Joe and Roman,
just to kind of finish clearing out what you started.
And then it was the same thing with last year. Last year, Backlash was like the tying of loose ends for people who are now on different shows but are still technically in feuds together.
Honestly, the thing that I'm most curious for is establishing Paige as the boss, as the person that runs it.
Yeah.
And you have this advantage of you have a show that is an overseas show, which means they can't do anything shocking, spectacular because it's, you know, filmed in advance, and so spoilers, and they'll want to avoid that. And you have it a go home show, which are always a little, you know, more safety goggles on.
Yeah, where they really try to, you know, they try to build excitement, but always kind of miss the mark.
Mm-hmm.
Except for that like really long match that Seth Rollins did a few weeks ago. Or a few months ago.
But, like, okay, let's build Paige as a character. This is the kind of boss she has. These are her goals for this job and this company. And, I would be interested. All right, and this is the perfect time to do it. She's still new, fresh, interesting part of this, you know, show. I don't know if they'll do anything with it, but that's what I want to see out of this next week.
Yeah, I agree. I'll go along with that.
Before we wrap this up.
Okay.
This is going to be a segment on the podcast for a while because Matt is going through old stuff.
Okay.
And we read some of his.
I was about to say, has he actually like gone through anything yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
I knew we were still putting together lists.
Yeah, we're putting together lists for him. I sent him basically the NXT TakeOver lists of, like, these are the takeovers you need to watch.
Yeah.
Which is, like, here's a quick catch-up through the history of all of NXT kind of thing.
I just say watch every TakeOver in its entirety from the beginning.
Well, and also, I forgot about this, but TakeOvers were, like, only 2 hours up until
most recent
very, very recently. Yeah. So I was like, oh, yeah, you're flying through these things. But it's amazing to read because he's like, wait, Rusev is Russian? I thought he was Bulgarian.
Yeah.
But he's like super Russian. I was like, yeah. That was a thing. And then he'll say stuff like, Adrian Neville is so fun to watch. Where is he on the main roster?
He's home.
And I'm like, oh no.
He's still listed as an active wrestler on the roster. But no, he's at home.
Yeah.
Not being very active.
And also, those two, I liked. The Ascension is fantastic. I'm sad I don't see them on the main stage.
Holy crap. Where are they?
Which, like,
I guess they're still on SmackDown.
They're on SmackDown. But you remember liking Ascension?
No, I never liked Ascension.
Did you not like them?
No.
Okay, but do you remember them being popular?
I remember them being
like,
a thing.
Even if you weren't personally into them.
The
like,
best moment I...
General...
Yeah, my fondest memory of Ascension was seeing their faces at the very end of Finn Balor's first demon entrance. Go back and watch that takeover and just watch that entrance, and you will see the two of them, like, on the ring apron, like, their heads kind of barely sticking up from, you know, on the ring apron, and they're just looking at each other and back at Balor like, what is this face? Yeah. That's my favorite Ascension moment.
My point is, the Ascension were hailed
as
the new generation of Road Warriors.
Right.
Like, there was genuine hype for these guys. And, like,
and then they were buried immediately.
Right, but with him going through this, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I remember being excited for them to come up. I remember this, like, big hubbub about the Ascension, and now it's like nothing. It's like,
no.
Bummer. He just watched the Charlotte and Natalya championship match. Natalya's best thing.
Oh, yeah, by far.
Ever.
Yeah. And that, like, as much as I like that match and everything, I do kind of have a very kind of a spiteful feeling about that, because it's because of that match that we have to always see a Charlotte and Natalya match like every other week. And I'm glad they're on separate shows now.
Yeah. And finally, am I allowed to like Enzo?
No, you're not. You're not allowed to like Enzo. I'm sorry. We ruined that. And okay, okay. My one complaint about the shakeup and SmackDown and everything.
It's big casting.
We did not. We, for these years, we were not hoping and praying for a Daniel Bryan return for him to immediately feud with Big Cass. No. Because I feel like we are on borrowed Daniel Bryan time. I don't want to waste a month or whatever feud this is going to be against Daniel Bryan. I'm just throwing that out there. That's how I feel, and I have very strong feelings about it.
So strong that you forgot about him until this exact moment.
Well, you've reminded me.
I will say, I'm not used to Daniel Bryan wrestling yet.
Yeah.
So every time he's hit with anything stronger than like a really stiff gust of wind, I'm like, careful!
Yes, very true. Now, it would be interesting if the catalyst for this feud was the fact that Big Cass was also medically cleared the same day as Daniel Bryan, and no one
and
cared.
Nobody cared.
Because otherwise, why? Why go after Daniel Bryan? Unless, oh, you're small. I hate small things.
It might be the small thing.
It probably will
it
be.
It might be the small
thing. And I'll be yelling about that next week then, when we find out. I do want to bring something up.
Okay.
You don't have to do it right now.
Okay.
But I want to get it on this podcast. Therefore, we are bound by it.
I'm not bound by anything yet.
Just wait until you hear what I have to say. We will do our way too early WrestleMania predictions very soon.
Yes.
We will not wait 6 months because we forgot again.
Yes, we will do that.
I am putting it on the podcast so it's out there. That way, the people that have our contact information that listen to this podcast will text us and just barrage us with emails and everything to do that episode of the podcast way sooner than we did it last year.
Yes. Our bad. We'll work on that.
Please and thank you.
Please and thank
you. But we can't do it next week because we got to do the.
Well, that's the thing. You got the Greatest Rumble, then you got the Greatest Rumble recap, and then you got Backlash.
I think we might have a little time between. I don't know what the dates are, but
we'll look at the calendar. I'm not sure we do.
That's fair.
So, all right. Anything else?
Nope, that's it.
As always, you can follow us on Twitter at @CRAttire, where we live tweet shows.
Yeah, and if you have anything you want us to bring up on the show, questions, comments, whatever, send that over to our email. That's classroomringattire@gmail.com.
We are also on iTunes. Easy way to follow the podcast. You can subscribe there. Get an episode every single week. Give us a rating of
5 stars.
Or write a review. That kind of interaction helps out the podcast.
Yeah, and if you're listening to us on InsidePulse.com, leave us a comment on there. We'd love to hear from you.
We're also on Facebook. Easy way to follow Chris. Yep. Easy way to follow myself. See what other kind of things we're working on.
Absolutely.
Until next time, stay classy and huzzah.
Huzzah.